Yesterday, Sayadawji spoke about how if one observes the phenomena that arise within one's being with ardent effort and accurate aim, the mind becomes collected and one comes to distinguish mental and physical phenomena. One comes to see these two very clearly. Continuing, one comes to see that these mental and physical phenomena don't occur without a cause. They occur due to causes. And if one continues to observe, one sees how these their arising is due to a cause, their passing away is also due to a cause. One comes to see that these mental and physical phenomena, which are related as cause and effect, arise and then pass away. Further, one sees that what does not last is not good. And the way that it has of these phenomena, which are neither permanent nor satisfactory, are just without an inherent self. They occur according to their own nature. And this is vipassana knowledge. This is when vipassana knowledge begins. So when one sees that, when one sees that things happen on their own, one understands that there is no soul or no self involved in one's experience. It is just a process, just mental and physical phenomena, just true nature. And in this way, one comes to see the various aspects of these mental and physical phenomena that are related as cause and effect. And this is what is meant by V in Vipassana. Vipassana means knowledge which sees. And V means in terms of the various aspects that mental and physical phenomena have of being impermanent, unsatisfactory, and lacking an inherent self. When one sees the fast arising and passing away of phenomena, one sees that they arise and immediately pass away. Just now it arose and it's gone. The old is continually being replaced by the new. This is characteristic of the stage of Udiyabhya Jnana, the insight into fast arising and passing away of phenomena. And yesterday, Sayadawji spoke about how at this stage, light, joy, tranquility, happiness, and other mental factors, physical and mental factors, occur in a very special way at this stage. At this stage, dhammoja, or the nourishment of the Dhamma, pulls up the practitioner so that the practitioner will not fall down. One's mental energy becomes full because of the dhammoja, the nourishment of the Dhamma. And today, Sayadawji will speak about this some more. And as one continues to observe mental and physical phenomena, these mental and physical phenomena are like an endless stream occurring one after another, rising, falling, sitting, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, bending, stretching. There's a continual stream of mental and physical phenomena that one observes, and this endless stream is called pavata. As one continues to observe this developing knowledge stage by stage, one comes to the cessation of these, of pavata, the cessation of mental and physical phenomena. This is called apavata. And when one crosses over from the experiencing, observing the continual stream of mental and physical phenomena to apavatta, the absence of mental and physical phenomena, this is called seeing nibbana, or realizing nibbana. And Sayadawji will also speak about nibbana today in brief. The Buddha said in the Parabhava Sutta, Dhamma kamo bhavang hoti. That means that, well, the Dhamma is theory and practice which can lift one's life up, which can keep one from falling down. Dhamma kamo is one who wants one's life to be lifted up. One wants one's life to be better, to become higher and higher. So one searches for a method to do this. This is the theoretical side. This is knowledge. And when one knows the method, then one puts it into practice. So such a one is called Dhammakammo, one who wants one's life to be uplifted. One wants this because one knows the qualities of the Dhamma. The Buddha spoke about seven special benefits that come from the practice of Satipatthana. And the first of these is purity of mind, freedom from the gross mental defilements of greed, hatred, and delusion. So even the first benefit, the first special quality of the Dhamma of Satipatthana, is quite good. But when one listens, learns about the special qualities of the Dhamma by either reading or discussing, listening, knowing the special qualities of the practice of Satipatthana, one will want to gain the qualities for oneself. One will have the confidence that this is possible, that these benefits can come about. So one has faith, learning about the special qualities of the practice. And with faith, then the desire to gain these benefits, chanda, arises. So one wants, because of this chanda, one comes to practice at a meditation center like this. And if one practices respectfully according to the instructions, then one gains sasana sampatti, the fulfillment of the trainings. One's physical, verbal, and mental behavior becomes refined, cultured, and pure. At the stage of Uddiyabhijnana, special mental energies called dhammoja, the nourishment of the Dhamma, enter the mind. And at this point, one sees the benefits of the practice, and thus one accepts that the method is true. So this is the power of faith, sada bala. One's faith becomes very strong through, because of the knowledge one has gained in the practice at this stage. It's very firm, and others can't just come and destroy it. Because of this faith, one becomes courageous. And even though one may encounter difficulties, like being tired, those don't faze one. One simply steps up one's energy in the face of difficulties because of the strength of one's faith. So this is called the power of virya. At this stage, the effort is called parekama dhatu. This means progressive effort that continues upward stage by stage without stagnating and without falling back down. This is also called pagaha virya. So at this stage, virya becomes a power, a mental power. To the extent one's effort, virya, is strong, sati will also be strong. So one has then the power of sati, the ability to observe the objects easily. When sati develops into a power, then the mind, the collectedness of mind, also becomes very powerful. And this is the power of samadhi. At this point, when the mind falls collectedly on mental and physical phenomena, whatever it is, that phenomena is known in very clear detail. So the power of samadhi brings about the power of wisdom, panya bala. Thus one knows that this method is beneficial. So further powers arise in one's mind. One knows that the method is beneficial, and one is therefore ashamed to let any kilesas enter the mind. One knows that if one misses a noting, kilesas will come in, mental defilements would come in, and one might do something unworthy. One might do something unwholesome. So one is both ashamed at the thought that kilesas would come in and fearsome. So these are the power of hiri, the power of moral shame, and otapa, the power of moral dread. These two qualities are, there's both shame regarding kilesas and a fear of them. So these are all mental powers that develop in the mind. And just as the body is becomes, one's physicality becomes clean because of the energy of the mind, so too, when these keen, sharp mental powers come into the mind, they become developed, the mind becomes developed in a special way. So these mental powers which enter into the mind and become powerful are called dhammoja, the nourishment of the Dhamma. So knowing this, one can deduce that just in the way there is physical nourishment, physical substances that nourish the body, so too there are mental factors that are nourishing. And similarly, if one eats food that is suitable or good for one, then the body becomes healthy and strong because of the food. So too, when one adds mental nutriment, when these mental powers come into the mind, then mental strength is increased. At this stage, when one's knowledge is very clear, one has enough nourishment physically, and when one has physical strength, one can withstand the cold, withstand the heat, withstand extreme conditions. When these mental powers are developed and become strong in one's mind, one can stand the worldly dhammas, the loka dhamma. When one has success, one doesn't find it as cause to be happy. One isn't elated by it. And if there's loss, there's no cause for sadness. These things are just the worldly dhammas. One isn't elated by experiencing happiness, and one isn't, when one experiences things that are miserable, one doesn't become depressed. One gains the ability to resist conditions. So when one has gotten out from under the thumb of the kilesas, when one has gained freedom from the kilesas at this stage, then and one develops knowledge, then one gains the ability to withstand the worldly dhammas, loka dhamma. Most people in the world do not have the ability to withstand the conditions of the worldly dhammas. When success comes, they feel elated. When they get fame or praise, they feel elated. When they fail, or there is blame or loss, people feel depressed. In technically advanced countries also, there are so many things that one can have. There are many material things that one can try to possess. So when one goes after these, when one tries to gain satisfaction by going after material pleasures, then this brings stress, tension, and depression. But when one has developed the practice and has developed these mental powers, then one is able to withstand these conditions and not go after them. In the upper stages of the practice, the pleasure that one gains from the practice is even better. And one's ability to withstand the conditions of life becomes even better. And best of all is when one has finally seen Nibbana. This brings us the best ability to withstand. And our lives will never go down once one has seen Nibbana. This Dhamma is a true refuge. Because of the Dhamma, our physicality becomes good. Especially, the practice makes the blood good. The blood becomes clean, and this clean blood circulates through the body. So due to this, one's eyes, the organs, the internal organs, such as eyes, ears, become very clean, and they become healthy. And one's appearance becomes bright. So one is able to hear better than before, see better than before, because of the mental powers that are gained through the practice. So even if one just looks at the worldly benefits that come from the practice, one can see that these benefits are priceless. A yogi who reaches this stage will not want to back, will not want to stop going forward. Such a one will not want to go away from the practice. If one has to leave the retreat unavoidably, one will always be looking over one's shoulder for the next chance to practice. And getting a chance to practice again, such a person will continue and will develop knowledge further. And when one's observation is fully developed, one will come to the point where there's no more object to be observed and no more observing mind. It said pavatang sankarang. That is that the mental and physical phenomena which are related as cause and effect occur without a break. There's no rest. There's no stopping. And this is called sankhara. These occur again and again. The object to be observed, knowing mind. Object, knowing mind. Object, knowing mind. These occur like a stream. One observes these. One has to keep on observing. And when one's observation is fully developed, one comes to the point where there's no more object to be observed and no mind to observe it. This is called apavattang, apavattang nibbanang. the cessation of the object of observation and the knowing mind is Nibbana. One who sees this has gained a guarantee for one's life, because one will never give up the practice. One will never fall away from it. And no matter what situation one is in, one will be able to control oneself. One won't want one's life to be unclean. So one will take more and more care with one's life. So this is what is meant by having a guarantee for one's life. This apavata, there's no rupa, no nama, no mind, no mind, no object. So there's no good thing to see and no pleasant feeling associated with this seeing of something good. No good sound to hear and no pleasant feeling, no taking pleasure in this. There's no good thing to smell, no fragrance, and no pleasant feeling, no taste, no taste associated with something one likes to eat, and no pleasant feeling. There's no touch, such as the gentle breeze of a fan, or the touch of nice soft fabric, or touch between the male and female. There's no type of tangible object that is pleasant, and no feeling. So there's, and when one experiences this apavata or nibbana, one has a happiness that is without sensation, is without experience, sense experience. So Seyaroji would like to show you how this can be. In the text, there are two kinds of sukha described. One is vediyita sukha, and the other is called avediyita sukha, or santi sukha. So of these two, the first, vediyita sukha, involves experiencing, when we experience any one of the six types of sense objects, the especially likable sense objects. When we see something we like, or hear something, sound that one likes, or smell a fragrance one likes, or taste any one of the six kinds of tastes, sweet, sour, salty, bland, bitter, and hot. When one gets the taste that one likes, then there's a type of happiness one gets. And touch, there can, for example, when one is hot, feeling the coolness of air conditioning, or when one's cold, feeling the warmth of clothing. Or those are ordinary types of sense touch, tangible objects that people find pleasurable. And then, of course, there's touch between the sexes, between male and female, those two. And then also there's the experience of having pleasant thoughts or pleasant imagination, somewhat like enjoyment of these may be similar to enjoyment of drugs. But it just, Seyaroji just means enjoyment of thought or imagination as a sense object. So these are all our what people in the world consider pleasurable. These are called vediyita sukha. This is the happiness that comes due to getting sense experience of any one of these six kinds: sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touches, and thoughts. Getting sense experience one likes. So the second type of sukha, or happiness, is a peaceful kind of happiness that doesn't involve in experiencing any of these six sense objects. So people in the world, in order to get the things that they need for themselves or for their family, they have to go to work. They work to get the basic needs or to get the things that make themselves happy. And at work, they get tired. So the things that one is trying to gain, one has to work to get them. So how is this happiness? Having to work day by day, one has to work whether one wants to or not. So one works, there's nothing left over almost. So one doesn't even want to go to work anymore, but one has to go. So one comes back home from work. Returning home, one is hungry and also tired. One wants to sleep, rest. So on one hand, the person is hungry, but on the other hand, they really want to sleep. So put yourself in that person's place and think, what is this person going to do first? Are they going to forego their rest? In other words, not rest, but eat some food to relieve their hunger? Or are they going to go to sleep and forget about their hunger? So the person has to choose between these two things. Say someone, that person has come home and they're tired after work, their body's worn out. So let's just say that person decides to go to sleep. They give preference to going to sleep. And so let's just say that person goes to bed and has a really good sleep. And while they're sleeping, someone comes along and wakes them up to give them some food. So how do you think the sleeping person who's just been woken up is going to react to the person who comes to wake them up to eat? Do you think that they'll like it, or will they not like it? So please, would the audience answer this question? Will the person get up happily, or will they get up feeling very grouchy? Now let's say that this person sleeps soundly and they wake up on their own. And when they wake up, waking up on their own, they feel fresh. Their mind feels alert and their body feels good. They feel full of physical energy and really fresh. So this is when they get up on their own. And that person will probably say something like, what a good sleep I had. So why is it that the person has not had any food, but they feel energetic and refreshed? So what is it that, why is it that the person says they had such a good sleep? How can they get refreshed if there's no food? So we should think about this. So because the person says what a good sleep it was, then there must be something good about it. But is there anyone who's been in that position of waking up saying what they had a good sleep? Can anyone explain what this good thing is that made the sleep good? So it's something that can't be explained. We can't say what exactly was good about a good night's sleep, but we also cannot deny that it was good. So this is the one thing in the world that can neither be denied nor explained. When one is sleeping soundly, there's no good sight, no sight as we ordinarily experience it, no sounds, no smells, no tastes, no touches, no thinking as we ordinarily experience. So these are all things that people consider to be very pleasurable when we get good sense objects that we like. So why would one give up sense pleasures? Why is it that people like to sleep? So we should think about this. Why is it that one is willing to give up these pleasurable sense objects for a good night's sleep? So, and similarly, the happiness that is gained that does not involve experience of the senses, this apavata, is true happiness. The happiness that one gains from seeing Nibbana is 1,000 times far, far better than the pleasure of any sense experience. Even if we were only to say that the happiness of Nibbana is 10 times better than any sense experience, one can calculate for oneself how good that would be. So now, due to the practice, when the yogis have reached the stage at Uddiyabhyayana, if they continue to practice, they are sure to realize this true happiness, avedita sukha, that does not involve any sense experience. That is not yet the complete end of the kilesas. This is just the first stage of realization, of nobility. So calculate how happy one would be if one could uproot all of the kilesas. Uprooting all of the kilesas is far better than uprooting them to the first degree, to realizing the first level of enlightenment. And one who gains this type of happiness, sometimes the person is able to experience this happiness for 1 hour or 2 hours, 3 hours. Sometimes a yogi can experience it even for 24 hours. Even up to 7 days, a person may experience the happiness of eliminating the kilesas. So when one's level is, when the yogi is very high level, on realization of nibbana, one may, will even exclaim how peaceful it is. So Sayadawji will talk about this. He can't go into this tonight, but he's going to talk tomorrow about the peacefulness that people experience and this exclamation that how peaceful it is that people make after realization. And further, Sayadawji will talk about how that only if one eliminates the kilesas can one experience this this type of happiness. This practice of satipatthana is the practice that must be done in order to uproot the kilesas. Developing the three trainings of sila, samadhi, and panya, morality, concentration, and wisdom, is the path that leads to nibbana. And this is the path that needs to be walked. Some religions, some beliefs, have no practice of the Eightfold Path, although they claim that there are those who have become pure and free of the kilesas. But it's not possible to become free of kilesas. There can be no person who has overcome the kilesas if there's no practice of the Eightfold Path. The Buddha declared bravely that this Eightfold Path of practice is only found in the teaching of the Buddhas. Sayadawji will talk about this tomorrow, and he will bring the retreat to a close in the coming days. That's all.